All right, hope everyone's having a great 4th of July week/weekend. I don't know what this is, that 4th of July now is in the middle of the week, but one thing we do know about July 4th, not only is it George Steinbrenner's birthday, but it is also another Yankee legend. John Sterling is turning 80 years old on 4th of July 2018. Of course, the legend that is John Sterling is born the same day as America was founded. And in honor of his birthday this week, we are on vacation, Wally and I, but we did want to put something out for you. So we decided to re-release our Sterling interview from John Sterling interview from early in April, I want to say it was. And it was a great interview spanning his whole career, going back to his days in Atlanta, going back to his days with the Long Island Nets, with Julius Erving at Nassau Coliseum. You know, we covered all his home run calls. He actually sang the Giancarlo Stanton home run call for us. And we've been very lucky to have some very good guests on the New York Baseball podcast. And it just seems like every guest we have on the show, somehow John Sterling comes into play. Somehow his name gets referenced, a story, just what they think about him. And Andrew Marchand wrote a very good piece in the New York Post last week that made the rounds on Twitter about John Sterling's life. And Andrew Marchand came on our podcast last week, and here are his thoughts on the legend that is John Sterling.
Love him or hate him, John is going to be the legend in Yankee history. I mean, he will be whoever replaces him, whoever the broadcasters are, they will be bringing up John Sterling. And I think most people probably have a little bit of a smile about Sterling. And when you're around him, you smile because he just kind of has that personality.
Yeah, he is a legend. In addition to that, our own Wally Matthews gave us a little insights into the how can I put this? John Sterling doesn't really use technology. He doesn't have Twitter. He doesn't have Facebook. He doesn't have Instagram. He doesn't even have a smartphone. He still uses a flip phone. And he has one of the most legendary voicemails, as Wally indicates right here.
John does not use email. You cannot text John. You call him and he has one of these weirdo answering machines where they say, please hold the line while we contact your party. I mean, it's like something out of the 50s.
I'm fascinated by
John's really good. But also, if you do get his message, I'm going to play you his voicemail message. It's really good. It's a John Sterling home run call, basically.
His voicemail?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good. It's
what
really
else would
good.
It be?
It's like, you have reached John Sterling. So, it is high.
One of the best interviews we've done so far on the podcast, in my opinion, was when we had Susan Waldman on the show, a longtime radio partner of John's. She spends every waking moment of her life for the last 10, 15 years has been with John Sterling. And she gave us an insight and a look into who John Sterling really is, beyond the microphone, beyond the Yankee calls and the home run calls. And it was really interesting to hear what she had to say right here.
We intrinsically like each other. And Kurt Gowdy always used to say, it's a very small booth. And I think, it's like family. You love your family. It doesn't say that you don't disagree, or
sure.
Sometimes I don't get, because we're very opposite. You talked about how I'm prepared. John loves to say that he flies by the seat of his pants. And he does. I can't do that, though. So I'm sure I drive him crazy. And, sometimes he gets, we could drive each other crazy, but we always go out to dinner and we're always together. And I think it's because, to me, John, he's different than anyone I've ever met. He's unique. He's sui generis. He's all by his own world. But he's basically kind and very unselfish and has no guile. He doesn't know how to hurt people.
And last but not least, his counterpart here in New York, Harry Rose, longtime Mets radio voice, came on our show and delivered us one of the best stories about John Sterling that had Wally and I cracking up. It involves a very young John Sterling and an automobile. Check this out.
And as we approached our car, I don't even remember who was driving. I think it was me. There was John standing outside of his car. It was a bright purple Dodge Charger or Challenger. The only thing that was missing was the big fedora and the long fur coat.
Wow.
But there's John standing outside this car, having an animated conversation with said vehicle because the car wasn't starting. Now, my friend Steve and I, we're two pretty impressionable kids. We're anywhere from 21 to 25, something like that. And there's John, who we'd known, standing outside having a conversation with the car. I heard John say, "Well, you would pick tonight not to start." And then he waits for this perceived response. And he says, "Well, I understand it's the coldest night of the year, but that's no excuse." And my friend and I looked at each other, and we just dove into our cars and drove the heck out of there.
Wow.
We didn't know where that was going.
Have you ever discussed this with John?
Not yet.
No.
Not yet.
Wow.
But now that this is out in the open, I might or I might have to.
All right, now here is the interview with the one and only John Sterling. Keep in mind that this was recorded a couple months ago, so if you hear anything about Giancarlo Stanton struggling or the Yankees trying to pick up play, just keep in mind this was recorded in about mid-April. Here he is, the legend, John Sterling.
All right, right at this moment, let's go to a man that I've known for probably 30 years, Dan. I've been listening to him for a long time. You have as well. The voice of the New York Yankees here with Wally Matthews and Dan Canobio, John Sterling, the one and only. John, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today.
Well, it's my pleasure. First of all, you know, all these years I've always loved talking to you, so why not do it on a podcast?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, you're starting your 30th year. Just announcing the Yankees. Of course, before that, you were doing the Atlanta Hawks, and you know, you're one of the WMCA good guys. How do you keep your enthusiasm, especially during a baseball season, 162 games, plus spring training, plus whatever happens in the postseason, and do it for 30 years, John?
Well, I think you have to love what you do, and since I've been a very little boy, you know, I've loved baseball, basketball, football, hockey, and I have no problem watching a game or listening to a game or going to a game, and certainly I have no problem broadcasting that game. If you go back to my Atlanta Hawks and Atlanta Braves days that began in November of 81, I haven't missed a game since then.
That's
so
incredible.
First of all, you have to knock on wood that you're healthy. You hope your health continues. Of course, who doesn't want good health? And if I have good health, it's no problem going to a game and getting up for the game.
You know, just doing the math real quickly, that's more than 6,000 games.
I'm sure.
Wow. you're basically the Cal
Ripken. Math is not my best subject, so I don't think I could add that up.
I could be wrong, but that seems like a lot of games.
I will tell you this. For 5 years, when I was doing both the Hawks and Braves, I was doing over 220 games a year. So,
my God.
So I'm very happy that I've had the health to do it. The interest is there, and the interest will be there till the day I die, because that's, you know, things I love. Things I love in life. You know, I told someone on an interview that I've had music and sports as companions my whole life, and I love them now as much as I did then. So in that way, I'm very lucky.
You know, John, when you and I spoke for the New York Times story I did on you a couple of weeks ago, you told me that you're as excited for this year's Yankee team as you have been in the entire 30 years. Tell me what it is about this team that you like so much.
Well, I think it began really with the postseason last year. And it was so thrilling at Yankee Stadium. It sounded like, as they say, the old stadium. Now, they did win all six games. And so then when they added, you know, all these young players you figure are going to get better, Judge and Sanchez and Didi. And so when they added Giancarlo to that group, gee, how could you not be excited? And if you say, well, they're off to a slow start. Well, they're 5-5 with a ton of injuries. But, you know, in baseball, if you're writing or if you're doing a talk show, things like that, you have to look at exactly what's happening now. But really, if you have a more intelligent or sophisticated look at it, you know, baseball takes a long time. They play a lot of games, and a lot of things are going to happen. So it's just begun, and you want to see it develop. And, you know, maybe after 30 or 40 games, you have an idea. Maybe you don't.
John, Dan Canobio, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast. And you've seen some pretty big debuts and pretty big imports for Yankees, going from Tino Martinez to Jason Giambi, Mark Teixeira, even Randy Johnson. And all those players have struggled at some point at the beginning of their Yankee tenure, maybe not to the degree of Giancarlo Stanton, with the 5Ks in multiple games. What can you tell Yankee fans to kind of relax a little bit? Because you can sense that there's a lot of panic going on in the Bronx right now. But what can you say to those Yankee fans to maybe calm down a little bit? It's only 10 games in.
Well, I think you have to look at, as they say, the back of Giancarlo's bubblegum card. He won the NL MVP last year. He hit 59 bombs. He hit in the 280s, and he drove in, I don't know, about 130 runs. So, that's baseball. And you hope that he's going to get – the guy you forgot to mention was Roger Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
Look how many great players have come to the Yankees and have really struggled. But, he'll get over it. It'll take some time. Tino hit a grand slam in Baltimore on May 1st in 96. I remember it because those last 2 days, April 30th and May 1st, the Yankees took over first place from Baltimore in two of the craziest games you've ever seen. Both games were way over 4 hours. And Tino, in the 15th inning of the May 1st game, hit a grand slam to left center. And that got him going. And so... I imagine that Giancarlo will get going. If he had just popped out or grounded out, I don't think anyone would have noticed.
Right.
Because a lot of, great hitters start off, 2 for 27 or so.
But, it wasn't amazing, John, and I was thinking this as I was watching the game on Sunday, that, players like him and like Alex Rodriguez, it seems like the key moment of the game just comes to them all the time, right? I mean, how does he get up, in that spot at the end of that game Sunday?
Well, they focus on the strikeout. It's a good story. People want good stories. And so, he's struggling. But, the Yanks had the bases loaded. And I said on the air, if they don't win, shame on them. They had the bases loaded, no one out, and Judge hit into a comebacker.
Right.
Into what would be the normal 1-2-3 double play. But Caleb Joseph, I thought, made a terrific play. He made it a 1-2-5 double play. And then Stanton struck out to end the game. So, I would say to them, if you want to worry, worry. But, you have to wait a while to see what happens in baseball. It takes a long time to get it going. This is a sport played every day. It's not football. It's the opposite of football. So, will he be better? Gee, I hope so.
Now, John, Wally has told me that you're a guy that you do have no email. You use a flip phone. Obviously, you don't have any social media out there. No Instagram, no Twitter. I don't think you're on Snapchat, John. But so my question for you is, when you have this iconic call now for Giancarlo Stanton, and it's everywhere. I mean, it's on TMZ. It's on national news. How do you, does anyone tell you that you're all over the media these days when you make these home run calls, especially for Giancarlo Stanton's?
Well, I get feedback from my producer engineer Jack Maldonado, obviously from my compañera and good friend for over 30 years, Susan Waldman, and from Michael Kay. So they bring me up to date, and I have three teenage and 120, and I find out things, and I don't miss whether it's good or bad. Being on social media, I do think that, as they say, it's a good thing that so many people were interested in that call.
Oh my God, it was everywhere.
I think it's phenomenally amazing. I began it very innocently. I gave nicknames to Bernard King when I did the Nets, and to Dominique when I did the Hawks. And but then with the Yankees, I guess my first one was Burn Baby Burn for Bernie Williams, and Bernie Goes Boom. He loved them, by the way. And it took off from there. Now it's become a cottage industry where I'm supposed to do a call for everybody.
Yeah.
Which is really tough. But anyway, it's a it's a fun thing, and I'm amazed that it's gone over so well.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, is there pressure on you knowing that, you know, no matter who walks into that clubhouse, you got to have one ready to go?
Well, I don't know if the word is pressure. I don't. I guess I don't feel, you know, pressure a lot. It is tough to do all of them, and you want them to sound good. You don't want to go on the air and sound lousy. I mean, no one does. And so, yeah, I just accept it. It's become a thing, a big thing, and it's very, you know, I'm a very different person. And so my broadcasting is very different, and no one else does this thing, so that's kind of good.
Yeah.
And it's worked out. It's tough to explain. I never thought it, but it's worked out.
You know, I know that you told Andrew Marchand in the Post yesterday, you know, that you're adding something to the Giancarlo call, and you told me, you actually sang it to me last week at Yankee Stadium. I couldn't sing it back, so obviously Andrew got the exclusive on that. But what made you decide to add something to it, and can you demonstrate it for us?
I haven't done it.
No.
Because he hasn't hit home. He's got to hit home runs for me to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, a compatriot of ours, and that means you too, Wally.
Yes.
You know, really good guy, Pete Caldera. Now, Caldera is not only an excellent beat writer for the Bergen Record on the Yanks, but he also has a very good voice.
Terrific singer. Yep.
Absolutely. And we love the same kind of music. I mean, we have our friendship began more about music than baseball. Anyway, he came into our booth. I'll do it for you now.
All right.
He came to our booth, and now Susan is an ex-Broadway singer, and I didn't see the article that Andrew wrote. I hope he got the name right, because he never heard of the song.
I hope he got the spelling right.
I have it here. He got it right.
He got it right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Pete said to me, as he stood in front of Susan and myself before a game, he said, "You know, John, I thought you'd do something like, non de medicar, that ball sure traveled far."
Oh, that's money.
Carlo. Anyway, that's really cute, and we both thought it was great. So when he starts hitting a bunch of home runs, I'll probably include that among the Italian phrase that I am using.
All right, come on, one more time. I got to hear that again.
The non de medicar?
Yep.
It was a song, I can tell you, three people who've sung it beautifully. Nat King Cole,
mm-hmm.
Dean Martin, and Jerry Vale. No, I'm sure a lot of other people. Non dimenticare means don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
Non dimenticare, that ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo.
That is beautiful. That is wonderful, John.
It's a cute play on words. You know, a guy called me on a talk show and said, non si può stoparlo, there's no such word as stoparlo. And I said to him, well, Berlitz disagrees with you. And then I said, in any event, it's called dramatic license. You writers use it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Cole Porter,
we call it fiction.
Yeah.
Anyway,
call it fake news.
That's why I like Wally. Cole Porter wrote, "It's a swelligan, elegant evening." Well, there's no such word as swelligan. And
right.
He also wrote, "It's delightful, it's delicious, it's de-lovely." Well, there's no such word as de-lovely. It's called dramatic license. I am amazed how seriously people take this.
Yes.
It's all fun and games. It's all nonsense.
Yeah, it always drove me crazy, John, that people don't realize this is just entertainment.
Yeah.
And they get so angry at us and, you know, you or me or whatever. You know, we're total strangers. They're angry at us about what we write or say about other total strangers. It just makes no sense to me.
Right.
Anyway, you know, John, we threw out there on my Twitter account this morning, you know, to all your fans, a lot of fans out there, what is the question that you've always wanted to ask John Sterling? We got a ton
got
of responses back, and we want to read a couple of them to you because I think you'll like them. I think they're actually they're pretty good. So I'm going to let Dan take the first one. Go ahead.
This is from Fernando Torres. Wants to know, what was the most emotional game you have ever called in your career?
Whoa. Boy, that's a heck of a question. I'll give you a few. I think the first one, and I was not doing the play-by-play. I was doing the, you know, color analysis, blah, blah, blah. Jim Karvelas was doing the play-by-play. It's when the Bullets finally beat the Knicks in the seventh game at Madison Square Garden. They beat him by 2 points. And that was a very emotional evening and a wonderful, wonderful evening. And we went after the game, everybody, including the owner, Abe Pollin, the late Abe Pollin, and we went to Jilly's. And then we went to that famed steakhouse. It's gone out of my head. There are two names, Frankie and Johnny.
Yeah, Frankie and Johnny.
Okay.
On 45th and 8th, and they kept the place open for us. It was after 2 in the morning, and we had this enormous table. And here's the owner of the Bullets, obviously a multimillionaire on one end, and here's me, I had about $5 in my pocket. And Abe Pollin said at the beginning of the dinner, he said, John, I'll get my half. You get your half.
Wow. So what do you do at that point?
I thought the Yankees, when they finally got to the, well, 95, all the games were emotional. They were 5 phenomenal games. The Yankees lost in extra innings in the 5th and final game in Seattle. Then the next year under Torrey, they made the playoffs, and they lost the first game to Texas, and down 4-1 to Ken Hill in the second game. And they got to 4-3, and they scored a run in the 8th inning. A very dramatic play. Bernie Williams tagged up on a fly ball down the left field line, and Rusty Greer caught it and threw to second, and Bernie was just safe, and then he scored on a base hit, I think by Fielder. Cecil Fielder had a hand in every Yankee win in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were tied at 1. Now they go to Texas, and they're down 2-1 going to the 9th inning. I thought that was a very emotional win. They won it, then they came from behind and won Saturday. And as Mel Stottlemyre wrote a book about it, he said almost every game they were behind in the 7th inning.
Yeah.
It was just a magical year. So I think you have to look at the 3 games in Atlanta were phenomenal.
Mm.
So, you know, it's tough to pick out one game, isn't it? I've given you now about 10 games.
Yeah, I know. You've seen so many. In your memory of these things is encyclopedic. It's amazing.
Have you always had a memory like that? Can you go back and recall certain counts like that? Is that something that all broadcasters
should
have?
Yeah, but I don't remember everything now. I mean, I do have an outstanding memory for things I like.
Mm.
But there are a lot of games have gone on that I don't remember. But those games I do. But they were some of the more really emotional games.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. There's no point in cluttering up brain space with things that aren't important at all. So I'm glad to hear that you remember the important things. Here's a question that I really like. This came from Michael Cronenberg, who's actually a colleague of mine at a publication called Ringside Seat, and he's a big film noir guy as well. I think that you're a fan of that as well. But here's his question.
Right.
You called you called Braves games when Torrey was the manager in Atlanta, right?
Right.
All right, and of course with the Yankees. Did you notice a difference in Joe when he was manager of the Braves as opposed to manager of the Yankees? I mean, both of the owners he worked for were tough guys to deal with, you know, Turner and Steinbrenner. Did you notice any difference in Joe?
I think that's a very good question. I'm going to surprise you with the answer. It's tough for me to explain exactly why, but Joe Torre was the same guy, and he's the same guy on and the same guy off. And he was a great manager in Atlanta. They hadn't won anything. They hadn't sniffed anything. And he came in 82, and he actually tried to win in spring training, some games anyway,
mm-hmm.
because he wanted to get them a feel of winning. And then they began the year with 13 straight wins, and they made the playoffs and got blown out by the Cards. And the next year, my first year, the Braves had – but I was doing pre and post for the Braves – in the year before that in a talk show on WSB, you know, along with the Hawks. And then the next year I got the Braves, and they had a 6-game lead going into late August, and in 1 week they lost the power at the corners. They lost Horner and Chambliss to injuries, and they lost the pennant by 1 game.
Wow.
Then the next year they finished 500, and Torrey got fired.
And, of course.
As Skip Carey said, he did it wrong. He should have finished 500 his first year, 1 game out in his second year, won it in his third year, and he'd get a 5-year deal. So, no, I thought Joe was a great manager then. I could see it. I could see how he managed players and the game. And, you know, it's true that he's a friend of mine. I'm very happy that he's a friend of mine. In his 12 years with the Yanks, you know, they made the playoffs all 12 years. And on the road, invariably, he would take me out for dinner after the games. I had a lot of wonderful times with Joe.
Is that something you miss now? I see with these new managers, and I hear it all the time that they, you know, they don't sit and talk with the reporters. They don't certainly don't mingle afterwards with the maybe with the radio announcers. Is that something that's missing from the game? You would say?
Well, there's no question about it. There's a tremendous change between teams and their broadcasters, and I guess they seem to treat broadcasters like media, and we're not media. We're team broadcasters. And when I was with the Hawks and Braves, for example, or when I was with the Nets and Islanders, I was like part of the team. I was very proud. Mike Pratello used to tell people he's like one of the staff.
Wow.
And that's all changed. That's really changed.
Well, just to piggyback off that question, John, you know, what are your first impressions of Aaron Boone?
Well, it's a little different, again, because I got to know Boone when he was with the Yanks, and then I got to know him even better when he was with ESPN. He would come in and schmooze with Susan and myself every single game.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very easy guy to like.
Yeah, very personable.
He has a wonderful personality, and already I see things that I like. You know, maybe starting runners to stay out of the double play, or... he gambles a little more, and I think now I will say this in Sports Illustrated's baseball issue, they do scouting reports. I love scouting reports, and the rival scout on the Yankees said, you know, Aaron Boone's a very lucky guy,
yeah.
And it's true. You know, you're only as good as your players. Mm-hmm. But I think Boone's going to be an outstanding manager, and let's face it. And while he's got some terrific players, if they ever get healthy, they'll have a heck of a team.
Yep.
Your next question from the fans goes from at Jack Caldwell 13. He wants to know, John, if you could call any sports event game of your choice not involving the Yankees, what would it be?
You mean like the Super Bowl or seventh game of the World Series?
Whatever.
Anything. Your choice. Kentucky Derby, anything.
A big boxing match?
What would I call? Well, I'd like to have another crack at the Yankees in the seventh game of the World Series, but I think everyone would like to call the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most,
have you done much football,
watched
John?
Event.
Have you done a lot of football?
I broadcast Morgan State in the 70s for like 8 years.
Uh-huh.
It's a small, predominantly black school in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working in Baltimore, and that's how I got the games, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And I did some football for YES, some TV football, and I loved doing it. I really loved it. Look, I told you, sports and music, they're part of my
right.
Every single day of my life.
And your voice
and I'll tell
great.
You one other good thing about me, Wally probably knows this, if I don't like something, or something doesn't appeal to me, I ignore it completely.
That's for sure.
I don't have any intercourse with it at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, any of the great sporting events, is there anything more exciting when you're there? And I did a lot of those games of playoff hockey.
Oh, yeah.
Hockey, especially in the Stanley Cup games, they're great.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, John, I got like one more here that I really want to ask you because I'm interested in this answer here. David Rosenblum asks, how come you don't do a talk show after the baseball season? You have such an interesting history with New York teams, the Islanders, a WMCA talk show. I mentioned before you were one of the good guys back in the 60s, right, with Jack Spector and a few other guys who I don't remember. I mean, you do have a lot of stuff to share that, you know, could obviously be a great outlet for you. Have you ever considered doing an off-season talk show?
Yeah, I would say that Mr. Rosenblum and those who would like that should call up a fellow named Mark Chernoff at WFAN.
Wonderful idea. Suggest a co-host.
He's the program director. He's the one who puts everyone on the air. I have started a talk show on certain Sundays from 11 to 12:30 before Yankee games. I think we just did one, and we have about eight more. But... you know, if as my buddy Joe Torre would say, it's negotiable, and
Isn't everything?
I would say that they should get in touch with Mark Chernoff, a lovely fellow, and tell them what they think.
Wonderful idea, and I think you should also suggest, those of you who are listening to this, and we'll make that call to Mark Chernoff, that Wallace Matthews be the co-host. Now, there's one last question I have to ask you here, and it comes from, I can't read the guy's name. It says, when are you going to do a book with Wallace Matthews as your co-author? Oh, actually, that one came from me.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that one I wrote myself. What are we doing the book, John?
Well, now I'm going to tell you a funny thing. You talk about coinkadink.
Yeah.
I have a dear buddy from my Baltimore days. He was the talent or a scout, chief scout, whatever, of the Colts, and then he came up to general manage the Patriots, and then he's been on radio and TV in the Boston area. His name is Upton Bell. And you recognize the name because his dad was Burt Bell, who really made the NFL what it is today.
Right.
I mean, he was one of them anyway.
He was the commissioner back in the 50s, right?
Anyway, Upton Bell just did a great book on football and on his dad. And he's after me to do a book. So you got a step up, Wally.
Oh, boy. You know what? So I must bid for your loyalty. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just being encouraged by Upton on one side and you on the other side.
Okay, well, I think Upton and I are going to have a talk somewhere. All right, I hate to do this to you. I'm going to put you on the spot here. My partner's name is Dan Canobio. He just hit a home run. What's the John Sterling home run call?
Like he hits one tonight?
He just hit one.
Well, I probably would say, Giancarlo, no si può stopparlo.
Beautiful.
And the Stantonian home run. I like, by the way, I came up with that right away, Stantonian. I kind of like that.
I like it,
so
too.
You have three calls for Stanton now.
Stantonian home run.
Yeah.
So you're going to keep all three of those when he hits a home run?
You know, Wally, I don't know. I do it from the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
However I feel it at the time. But that's nothing wrong if you do. I have different ones for Judge.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Judgment Day, he's judge and jury.
Right. I got to tell you, I loved the Brandon Drury call. I thought that was great. Aaron is the judge,
yeah,
but Brandon's the jury. That was terrific.
Yeah, he's got to get off the DL and hit some more. He will, too.
Yeah.
John, I was watching a late documentary on Bob Shepard, and he said some of his favorite names to announce. Pronounce, and one of them was Shigatoshi Hasagawa, and it got me to think,
yeah.
What are some of your favorite names to pronounce while we're talking about this right now?
Well, you're catching me unawares. There are those, but I like that too. I'll give you, he used to love to say Shigatoshi Hasagawa.
Right.
The Montreal PA announcer, this public address in the stadium, he did a very operatic call for John Bacabella.
Yep.
And and the guy in San Diego used to say number 14, Enzo Hernandez. You got to go to war. So those are fun to me. I can't think of one. I'm sorry. I wish I could.
That guy in Montreal. Remember he used to do Coco LaBoy, right?
Yes.
There's another one? Yeah, he was great. I loved him. Well, anyway, John, listen, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And here's hoping you do 30 more seasons as the voice of the Yankees.
Well, that would be great.
And that's a lot of home run calls you got to come up with.
Impossible, but great. Thank you. And as you know, you can put the check in the mail.
Once again, a very happy birthday to John Sterling, 80 years old. Got the cataract surgery, seeing the ball better than ever. His memory, as you just heard there in this interview, second to none. The guy was recalling 2-1 counts to Tino Martinez in 1996. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's a legend in the booth. Love him or hate him, he's going to be surely missed when he decides to let it go. But that's it for this week on the New York Baseball Podcast. We'll be back next week with Wally Matthews and myself. We're going to have some great guests. The Yankees are, of course, going to keep on winning, and we're going to have to tackle what's going on in Citi Field, as we're going to have to see maybe DeGrom, Syndergaard, maybe they're going, some other pieces. So it's very interesting times here in New York. Hope everyone enjoys their holiday weekend.